Thanks a million, Ray.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That always makes me giggle. Good afternoon. How are you? Hope all is good. 51551 for your texts or ray@rte.ie for your emails if you want to join in the chat today. Don't know about where you are, but lads, it has been positively balmy in Dublin for the afternoon. Might be a bit of an exaggeration. It was getting a little darker and a bit more moody as I was coming down to studio. But where are all these thunderstorms and lightning strikes that were forecast? The hail and the flooding. No doubt it's on its way up here, but let me know if it's lashing out of the heavens where you are. Have you the dog strapped down? Have you the fire on? Are you all nice and cosy? Because we were, of course, and are bracing ourselves ahead of the status yellow weather warning from Met Éireann. And earlier in the afternoon, we just sent a message to Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather. And he has been keeping us up to date. He was saying the first lightning strike was in the last hour in Tipperary. And there has been about 12 lightning strikes now, he's saying. He's just texting in here, mostly in the Midlands, it seems. And I think there was one flash of lightning up north. So we will keep in touch with Alan as the show goes on. But you guys, be my eyes and ears on the ground. Let me know what's happening weather-wise where you are. 51551. And if you want to get really nerdy, super nerdy, my producer Ciarán alerted me to a website called blitzortung.org. B-L-I-T-Z-O-R-T-U-N-G, I think is how you spell it. It's German, of course it is. And it's a real-time lightning strike weather map, and I'm looking at it now. Germany is getting lashed out of it with lightning, as is northern Italy, and I think that looks like Romania. Anyway, stay safe wherever you are, because I know they did forecast hazardous driving conditions. So regardless, just stay safe on the roads today. Now, Laura Durkin from Dublin tweeted a photo of herself that gave me a right giggle today, in a full face mask that she bought back in March 2020 and never used. And when I say full face mask, lads, it's hilarious. It's like, it's one of those fencing masks from the Olympics. That's what it looks like. And it has a regular cloth cover covering her nose and mouth, but then it has a full clear hard plastic like cover that clips at the top, and it's essentially like a helmet. And she thought she'd be wearing that to work back in March 2020 in those strange, murky times that none of us want to go back to or witness again. But it got us thinking here, what other items did we all purchase in a panic last year but never used? All the unused pandemic purchases. A member of the team who shall remain nameless bought 2 full gas masks. Which now he thinks he might, you know, go out and spray the back garden fence wearing, but was fully convinced that that was something that he might need in the early days of the pandemic. Bread makers, they were a big one as well. People went mad buying bread makers. Home gym equipment was another one, another big purchase for people, a lot who that ended up gathering dust. And then somebody reminded me today of the toilet roll stash. Remember, some people are just getting through their stash right now. So let me know what was the weirdest, the worst or the best purchases that you made during lockdown. 51551. This also made me smile today. Lots of you, I know, are still working from home, but plenty of people have returned to work and they're now back dealing with that situation. You know, the shared fridge in the office. And the nightmare that's lunchtime, it's rolled around, you head there into the canteen or into the staff meeting room, you open and the Sambo that you have been waiting for, looking forward to all day, has disappeared. Is there anything more annoying? Well, one woman shared her rather frustrated note that she wrote to her colleagues after discovering her longed for fresh mango had been ravished. And she wrote a note and stuck it on the fridge, all in shouty capitals too. "Someone ate my fresh mango. I looked forward to it all day," underlined. "I came to take it out and there was one single piece left out of the fridge, not even inside the fridge. Kindly leave $6 on my desk or a new fresh container of my favourite treat and no one will get hurt," underlined. So rather passive, not even passive aggressive, rather aggressive, and rightly so. Jennifer Doppett was her name. But Yeah, it just got me thinking, like, have you been the victim of it? Because people are going back to the office now. And maybe you are the cereal snack stealer in your office. Or what lengths have you had to go to protect your lunch? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Oh my God, the text coming in here. Thunder and lightning very heavy in Mullingar right now. Catherine, headed your way. It's biblical in Limerick. Patrick and Declan currently driving up to Naas on the M7 from Limerick. Torrential rain and lightning. It's coming for you, Catherine. Oh my God. I've just been living in a little bubble here. Very bad in Mullingar. Stay inside. Somebody else. Yeah, so the Midlands seems to be getting it. Cork as well. Pouring down here in Cork. I'm like a marathon runner all morning, running in and out of the washing line, minding the washing. Bring it in, Mary. Just bring the whole lot in. Okay, Jer said it's a little cloudy here. It's only a little cloudy here, but we have sunshine in the sunny southeast. In Gorey, the sunny southeast never lets you down. I love it. All right, what else do we have? Yes, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, lads, but mullets are back. I was reading this morning about Australian sprinter Rowan Browning. He may not have made it to the final, but he certainly ran with style in the 100 metres qualifying heat at the Olympics in Tokyo with his mullet blowing in the breeze. And we had to address this very serious issue because we've noticed mullets walking around Dublin. They seem to be back. I'm joined on the line now by Mark O'Keefe, hairdresser and managing director of Sugar Culture. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Catherine. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I have seen them. I thought it could be a phase. I thought it could be post-pandemic, people not getting into the barbers yet. But they are making a comeback.
Yeah, and they have been for a while. I have a nephew who plays rugby for Taranuri's on the Jays, and it seemed to happen even before COVID, where some of the young lads involved in rugby were getting mullets. We noticed it out in Blackrock, where fellas from Blackrock College and Michaels were getting it. So it did start before COVID, but it definitely grew legs during COVID and during the lockdown. So yeah, they have made a comeback for sure.
Okay, and are you a fan? Like, what do you think of the mullet?
Well, Catherine, I'm rocking a little mullet. I have been for some time, yeah.
I know.
I've always been a bit of a fan of a mullet and a mohawk. So I have to say I would support it big time.
So it's not just a COVID thing. It's not just a post-pandemic thing. And so is it just teens and early 20s? Or I know you've always been cool, but yeah. Is it going across the board?
No, I think, you know me, I'm always trying to hold on to my youth in some shape or form. So I wouldn't be the norm for my age bracket. But no, I think it's fair to say it would definitely be teens, early to mid 20s. And look, I think it was one of those things where when lads had the clippers, it was so much easier.
Yeah.
When we were all close, just to shave the sides of your head and not worry about the back or the top. And then, of course, it became a bit of a fad and a bit of a cool thing to do. So that's where I suppose it did stem from. But it has, even though we've opened back up, lads are still happy to come in and get nice fades on the side and leave the sides and back and embrace a bit of curl and a bit of length and a bit of texture. So, and look, they're having a bit of fun with it. So who can knock? I sent a photograph on to one of your researchers today. And,
yeah.
You know, there's some really, really cool mullets going around.
So that was the thing. That's what I've noticed. There's a lot of kids going around with shaved at the side, both sides, like short, like shaved, and then the kind of the short at the top and then the long at the back. So the mullet has moved into the 21st century. Like, it's not Billy Ray Cyrus stuck in the 80s.
No, it's not. And I suppose the original mullet came from a practical reason where people were trying to protect the backs of their neck from the sun, and that's where the term redneck came from. But, I mean, you touched on Australia.
Mm.
The mullet in Australia has been on trend for some time, and New Zealand, and I think that's why it crossed over into the rugby world over here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, it's definitely something that has moved into the 21st century and it has an edginess and, like I said, a bit of a trend to it. So, yeah, like, I think it's going to keep going for a while.
Yeah.
And you also there's a perm in the hair now as well. Have you seen that?
No. No.
Yeah. So
what?
The perm is coming back, but not with women. It's coming back with young guys. And again, they're now going for really curly mullets and really curly mohawks. So young guys are seemingly really embracing, kind of, I suppose, thinking outside the box with their hair, where a lot of girls have gone quite formal with the hair, and they're sticking with balayage and that kind of more beautiful type of hair and long hair. And guys, I think, are being a lot more adventurous with new looks.
Well, I think it makes sense, because if no one was in the hairdressers or the barbers for, a lot of people didn't bother going back for a year and a half. So when all of a sudden you have all these locks and extra locks to play with, you can do stuff like have a bit of fun with them and have a longer style, put your perm in if you want. And it's a real statement after being locked down and not very possibly creative, or you know what I mean? It's a nice outlet for
completely.
People.
But as well as that, I suppose there's less commitment, because if a girl has grown her hair out for 3 years, she's not going to suddenly shave the sides off easily, or she's not suddenly going to start whacking rollers in her hair and see what a perm's going to look like. So it's easier for a guy who's maybe only grown his hair out for 6 or 9 months to be a little bit more adventurous and play around with colour and curl and that kind of thing.
Who's rocking
from that point of view? That's why.
Who's rocking your favourite mullet at the moment? It was Shane Byrne. When you talk about rugby, he was the master of the mullet.
Absolutely.
He was the master.
And he still has his mullet for that reason, because it's become very much a staple of his look. And, when you think of Shane, you think of his mullet. So I don't think he could ever shave his mullet off.
Okay.
We've actually... Australian and world track runner. His looks pretty cool too.
Really cool. We've actually had a listener text in going, what are you talking about? What is a mullet?
Well, as I said, the mullets stem from the rednecks in America who grew out the back of their hair to protect their necks from working in the sun. So that's where it came from. So it's literally that short in the sides and top traditionally, and long at the back.
Yeah, you could describe it. It's like business at the front, party at the back.
Party at the back.
That's
exactly
what it is.
Yeah.
Come here, your barbershops, they're called Sugar Daddy. How has business been? How has it been back open again? And
Across the board, as you know, we've ladies' hair salons and Brown Sugar, and we've nail salons and Sugar Coated, and it's been very, very... Actually, our industry as a whole is really struggling the last few weeks. We opened up across the country with a bang. We kind of only got about 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks out of it, some salons where it was really busy. And then it fell off a cliff, because people have nowhere... There hasn't been events, there hasn't been weddings, there hasn't been parties. People aren't haven't really been going out. There's been no real pressure for people to get their hair done. So what we found then, if you throw the really good weather of the last few weeks in, it was a bit of a perfect storm.
Yeah.
And the industry across the board has been very, very quiet for the last, I'd say, 4 weeks, maybe a little bit longer, but certainly the last 4 weeks. And we're just hoping now when offices and things like that come back to work that we're going to see a big boost across the country.
Please God.
Please God.
Maria in Cork said, my 16-year-old asked for assistance to create a mullet pre-opening up of the hairdressers. Let's just say the spotty emerging facial hair, poorly cut mullet look was brutal. Gave his siblings and parents a great out laugh. There you go. So at least you gave it a go. Mark, lovely to chat to you as always. Mind yourself.
Lovely to speak to you, Catherine. Great to hear you back on the radio.
Thanks, Emil. Let's get a bit of Rag and Bone Man and Calvin Harris. That is Rag and Bone Man and Calvin Harris with Giant. The sun is shining in beautiful Ballinskelligs in South Kerry. While Pat, just in the text underneath, says dangerous driving conditions in Kerry, awful heavy torrential rain. Just goes to show how different our weather is in different parts of, not even different parts of the countries, different parts of the counties. Brenda said, I am in Spain. We had hailstones as big as 20 cent coins and thunderstorm on Saturday. Thankfully, it's been wall to wall sunshine since then. Enjoy the holidays, Brenda. Yvonne and Vonnie say in Kilmuckridge, we've got a few clouds around, but it's very balmy, very warm. The sun is out. We're enjoying our holidays. Just had a big bowl of coddle. Delicious. The sunny southeast is the place to be, obviously. All right, keep them coming in. 51551. Now it is time for this. Yes, our quiz of today, and we have rounded up events in history that happened on this day, the 5th of August, and created questions for two of you to come on air after 4 o'clock and go head to head for a fantastic prize. And that prize today and all this week comes courtesy of the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick, where you could win 2 nights stay, including breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening. The Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick is a fantastic base to explore the wonders of both the Wild Atlantic Way and Ireland's ancient East. A short drive from the hotel, guests can go to the Cliffs of Moher. You can soak up the history at Bunratty Castle and Folk Park, or King John's Castle. Limerick is a brilliant city. It's one of my favourite, I have to say. The hotel, again, you're near Thomond Park, you're near the Gaelic grounds, you're near the University of Limerick. So there you go. Who wouldn't want two nights in the Radisson Blu Hotel and Spa in Limerick? You can find out all the details on inua.ie. That's inua.ie. So to be in with a chance to win a nice staycation for yourself, all you've got to do is answer this qualifying question. What county is Olympic boxer Kelly Harrington from? Give us a call on 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And be in with a chance of packing yourself away, heading to Limerick, and have someone serve you a bit of dinner. How bad?
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You can keep your texts coming in to 51551. Now, they may say that there's nothing special about us and a lot of hard work can get you there, but we are still in awe of our lightweight men's double sculls heroes, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, Olympic gold medalist and FBD insurance ambassador. Paul O'Donovan is on the line. How are you, sir? Where are you, by the way?
Me? Oh, I'm at home here now in West Cork, just outside Skibbereen. So I'm very happy to be back here. Like, we've been away for most of the summer with all this rowing lark, so it's good to be back now and see the mammy and all that type of stuff.
What was the first dinner she cooked you when you got home?
I was bacon and spuds.
Nice.
Yeah, class. You missed that.
Come
they
here.
Don't do great spuds in Japan, like, no. For some reason, no. They have great sushi, like, but can't do potatoes.
And are you a fan of sushi?
I like it, I do, yeah, I like seafood, but I suppose we're not too far away from the sea down here as well, so we'll be used to eating all the mussels and the fresh fish and all that stuff. So I like the sushi then.
Lovely, lovely. Listen, huge congratulations to you again and to Fintan and Emily, of course. I was actually down in Skib on the morning everyone woke up to the news of your win, and we were filming down there, and I witnessed the gold post boxes with my own eyes, and there was just a great buzz and a great sense of pride about the place. And I drove the road out actually. I was heading to Ballydehob from Baltimore, and I drove past the rowing club, and it's just brilliant. I mean, the sense of pride locally coming back, because obviously last time with Rio with the silver medal, the whole town went berserk and mental and turned out to greet you. With the old COVID restrictions still in place, was it a different sort of a welcome for yourself and Fintan, or how was it?
For sure. Well, there was Emily Hegarty as well with her bronze medal was coming back, and we had Lydia and Gary were the spares. It was kind of five was coming home, but definitely for sure it's different to last time coming home. But I actually preferred it, to be honest, because we were overwhelmed last time. There was like millions of people down in Skibbereen, and it was just too much. But now, there's only a small crowd there, like only the close friends and family. So you can actually have a nice little conversation with them, rather than before you even get the first word of a sentence out to someone, there's someone else pulling in another direction and stuff if there's too many people. So it's been good for us, I think.
Okay.
And sure, maybe a little later on in the year, if things get better, they can have a big celebration then and invite the millions out to Skibbereen for a party or something.
Well, listen, there'd be a queue of people trying to get in. And the traffic in Skibbereen can be bad enough at the best of times. But come here, where is the gold medal at the moment?
So I was doing some pictures there for FBD because they've been supporting me a long time. So I was out in the rowing club doing that. But with the medal, I left it in the car then. Since then, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, we all love you because you're so relaxed and you're so down to earth. But like winning the gold medal at the Olympics, does it? It has to feel different, you know. I mean, does it feel bigger? Has it sunk in?
No, I don't think. I can't figure out what there would be to sink in. Like, just nice for sure. I suppose, I don't know, I just can't. I don't feel different, like, at all.
Okay, and it's interesting.
You'd obviously be very happy, but I think I'd try to be happy about life anyway, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I was listening to Kelly Harrington obviously this morning as well, and she was saying the same. It's not the medals. It's the sense of pride and the people at home and who's behind you and who's supporting you. Did you see her match this morning?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I was on very early, and I've been training and stuff since. But I'm going to try and catch a repeat now if I can.
Yeah.
A little later on. But I think it's Sunday. She's on again now for the big showdown. So that should be good for sure.
Absolutely. And are you watching any of the coverage yourself now that you're home, or is there an Olympic sport, like another one apart from rowing, that you like to watch? Or are you just like, you know what, your head is full of it, you need a break? Like, do you try and kind of separate yourself from it?
No, I wouldn't say. Like, I don't think you need a break or anything. I enjoy the Olympics, actually. But well, I actually value my sleep, and I was warning everyone while the race, the rowing was going on, I said, don't bother getting out of bed to watch it. And I've actually followed up on that own advice myself. I've been I've been getting my good night's sleep over here, and then kind of catch up on things then in the morning at a sensible hour.
I get it.
Yeah. No, but I do. I enjoy a lot of the sports, actually. Like, the athletics is good. I enjoy that.
Well, I have to ask you, right, because, you know, I've had conversations with my friends. I know nothing about rowing, and we're having conversations about rowing, and, you know, everyone has all of a sudden become an expert. And I suppose that happened the last time as well. Does that bother you when you're, you know, the whole country then, who probably takes not as much interest, but this time round now, we're all the experts. We all know all about rowing.
No, I think it's good. Like, I don't mind that. Like, and sure, I'm the same way myself with other sports. Like, we'd be watching weightlifting there on the TV and this type of thing from the Olympics, and you'd be trying to figure out what's going on, and you'd be like, geez, it's a cool sport, like, we should watch it all the time. But sure, I know myself, I'm probably not going to for the next couple of years. Like, and I suppose that is the great thing about the Olympics, is that it's able to generate such attention for sports, you know, and put them out there on a big platform for everyone to see. And it's great for young kids to be able to see that and experience it. And I think, like, if that type of thing was on every six weeks, or even 6 months, or every year or something, it would cease to be the same, you know.
Yeah. It's such a spectacle. And I also think as well, I'm loving all the, because there's such communication with the athletes now on Instagram and TikTok. So you kind of see behind the scenes and how people are living in the Olympic Village. And there was a couple of things that I wanted to ask you, which when I knew I was chatting to you, that have nothing to do with rowing at all. But you know, when you're in the Olympic Village, and I've heard you interviewed before about the amount of food you have to eat, and your poor mother is scalded with trying to put the dinners up to the two of you. Like, who looks after the food? Have you got a chef? How do you get the calories in? How does that all work? How do you stay on track when you're out there?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's less of a worry, actually, when you're out there. So basically, well, there's a massive canteen out there where they do all the food for everyone, and you can get whatever the hell you like sushi, you know. And there was a big thing over there, and chicken and rice and the lamb and roast beef and all this type of stuff. But I think for us, because we have to weigh in 2 hours before each of our races, that we have to be a bit careful of what we're eating. And a spell just in the week or two before the regatta, we're really cutting back on the training volume to freshen ourselves up, to give the best performance, that we're not actually burning so much and trying to lose a little bit of weight because we train a bit higher. So I think at that stage, actually, we're eating very little, and there's nearly too much of an option for us with the food. We have to be careful. But I think we managed it all right.
It's like me being let loose at the all-you-can-eat buffet. You have to kind of step back when you can.
Yeah, that's it.
And in terms of your training, right, because when I look at rowers, and it's all, you would think it's all upper body strength, and you're pulling like a dog and all that. Do you do leg days? Because I hate training leg days, but do you do that as much as you have to do on the upper part of your body? Is that as big a part of your training for rowing?
Oh, yeah. Every day is a leg day for us, to be honest. We nearly forget about the upper body. My arms aren't very strong at all. I think most girls would beat me in an arm wrestle.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's all in the legs, and you think it's all in the pull.
Yeah, no, it's not. So what I always say is, like, if you're playing like a game of football or something like that, and you want to get the ball as far down the field as you can to your mate at the other end, like, you don't give an old fist pass to them. You kick the thing as hard as you can, because your legs are much stronger. So we've got sliding seats in the boat, and so we kind of slide up, compress the legs, and then our arms are just kind of holding onto the oar and kind of hanging off it, and we use our trunk then to kind of transfer the energy from the legs into the arms, and just the little bit of a pull then at the end is, Joe, the boat is moving at that stage, and all the acceleration has been put into it. So you're just finishing it out with your hands and taking the oar out. So it's very, very little to do with that. So we've been doing a lot of squats now and deadlifts and all that type of thing in the gym, but mostly just endurance stuff on the water, in the boat, or it's on the rowing machines if we can't get out.
Okay, so yeah, there's a fair bit of strategy. I mean, it's a very strategic sport. Because I loved, I mean, the crack that you had on the Graham Norton show when you were saying it was just to go from A to B and you would just wait for the signal to start. But it's you have your tactics, and in terms of your competition, were you constantly checking and keeping abreast of how other people were performing in the lead up to it, in the same way that, you know, that happens on most other sports too? Or are you just solely concentrating on what you and Fintan are doing in the boat?
We are mostly concentrating on ourselves and what we're doing. And I suppose the thing about rowing is there's not too many races in the year. There's maybe three or four kind of big regattas, and we went to the two of them and we raced, you know, both the Germans and the Italians there, and the Norwegians are one of them. So we had a kind of a good sense of what their form was like. I think we kind of seen as well this year, the Germans were putting a big emphasis on the third 500, because in previous years, that's where we really did the damage on the rest of the crews, was through that third 500. Mm. And so we were kind of expecting that then coming from them. But we knew that that we'd be able to put in a good third 500 and have a sprint at the end of it. Whereas the Germans tried that in the Europeans with a big third 500 and they didn't have the sprint. I suppose you're only kind of hopeful or guessing beforehand that they won't have it this time. And fortunately they didn't. And we managed to pull away a little bit in the last few hundred meters. So that was good.
Mm. And you say as well, like it is about surrounding yourself with good people, and your coach, Dominic Casey, he's obviously one of them. And he doesn't seem to be a man for the big pre-race pep talks. Like his main message to you after the race was, get the boat back safely.
yeah, pretty much. He's always kind of straight down to business and knows what needs to be done. So he's already on to us now about how we're going to get faster for Paris. Because we're a little bit worried that we've only half the time for training than before Tokyo. You know, only 3 years now to go, whereas we had five there the last time. So we've a lot of planning to do.
When you say it like that, Paul, like it's years and years and years, and we see snippets on the telly. You know, we get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, we're all excited. But how do you not become completely and utterly consumed? Or is it unavoidable? Because there's been a lot of talk, particularly in this Olympics, about mental health and, you know, the amount of time and energy athletes put in the sport and the pressure that's on them, you know, from the media, from social media as well. How do you make sure that you don't get fully consumed? Or is it about your setup, your people? There seems to be, even listening to Bernard Dunn on the radio this morning about having the crack, they have a bit of a dance in the dressing room, they go for their walks. It really seems to be about as much of as it is for the athletes, it is about the team that they have around them as well, to keep you kind of sane.
No, it is for sure. I suppose, well, Joe, for myself there, like I'd be an ambassador for FBD, so I always get a break from the rowing to go out and do a bit of work for them, you know, whether it be go to a school and meet the kids that are after winning a prize or something like this, you know, which is kind of cool. Mm. But otherwise, I think, well, rowing and a bit of exercise is good for the mental health as well. But I think a lot of us then on the rowing team are in university, so I'm in UCC and on the Quirica scholarship there, and a good few others on the rowing team actually are in UCC, and so they've been very good to allow us to go part time as well as our studies when we need to, so that say this year now in particular we can focus a little bit more on the rowing a bit earlier on and stuff like that. Mm. And I think the rowers are generally good that way, that they have something else besides the sport to keep them occupied, and studying seems to be a good match because there's no physical exertion in studying. You can just work out the mind, and then when you've done too much study, then you can go do some training and get a break from that. So it's good to have a balance that way for
it
sure.
It's a nice balance. And when are you getting back to the medical studies? Because you're off to Henley and the Regatta. Is that next week?
That's next week, yeah, weekend. Okay. And the National Championships in Cork the weekend after that.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I think...
Do you bring your books on the road with you?
Well, no, I've not. I've been on leave of absence now since December last year.
Okay.
So I'll be taking them out the cupboard and dusting them off. but I'll be back the end of the month, the end of August, early September, I'll be back.
Happy days.
So that'll be good, yeah, to see the lads again and stuff.
Now, I have to ask you about the hair. Because I am a woman, I love a fella with long hair, always have. And this morning we were chatting about mullets of all things, and because Rowan Browning, the Australian sprinter, he was putting his success down to his mullet. But you are rocking your long hair, my friend. You're rocking it as good as Hosier. How long have you been growing it?
Oh, I'd say it must be over 2 years now, I reckon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a fair while.
And do you think, like, same as Rowan, do you put your success down to it, or is it a bit Samson now that you can't cut it because it's brought you such success?
No, I think I'm going to cut it off all of a sudden there now someday so that nobody recognise me anymore. yeah. Listen, go back to being incognito.
What does your mother like it?
I think she does, yeah. The grandmother says she does anyway. But you're,
Well, listen, you're
saying that anyway.
You're looking good and feeling good and sounding good as well. And massive congratulations again to such success for Skibbereen, for the rowing club down there, for everybody. And thanks for representing us so well, as always. Paul O'Donovan, nice to chat to you.
Thanks very much, Catherine. Appreciate it.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
In October 2016, the Munster and Ireland rugby legend Anthony Foley died unexpectedly as the team prepared to play a Champions Cup match in Paris. Anthony, or Axel as he was known, had played for Ireland 62 times and also led Munster to their first European Cup victory in 2006. I think it's fair to say he was so loved across the board, whether you were into rugby or not. And people lined the streets in Killaloe in County Clare to say goodbye, and then even bigger numbers as the procession passed Thomond Park in Limerick. His sister Orla Foley joins me now from our Radio na Gaeltachta studios in Derrybeg in County Donegal, because for nearly 10 months she has been cycling the Wild Atlantic Way in her spare time to raise money for a number of charities, including ones that Anthony was deeply involved with. Orla, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good. I'm here enjoying lovely Donegal.
Well, first of all, tell us what the weather is doing up there, because it seems to be very changeable. We have sun, we have rain, we have hailstones. What's it doing in Donegal?
Well, up to today, it was beautiful and sunny mostly. And today, heavy rain this morning on my caravan roof,
right,
which said, turn over and go back to sleep for another hour.
Nice.
And when I actually got up and got out in the bike, it's blustery. But I didn't really get too wet. But you just don't know what way it's going to go. But I believe I'm under a sort of illusion that Donegal has a microclimate up here, because I keep seeing hills and with rain on the faraway hills, and I seem to be not getting it.
Not getting it. You're avoiding it. Well, listen, because you started in Cork, you're now in Donegal. And I have to ask you first and foremost, the first thing I thought was you must have a very comfortable saddle on your bike to take on 2,600 kilometres of the Wild Atlantic Way. I was in a camper van and you're on a bike.
I have a special Italian touring saddle
that
it has a few springs in it. So, yeah.
Needed, I would
needed,
say.
Yes. That was changed after about 2 weeks.
Come here, take us back to the start of this and why you decided to do it, to cycle one of the longest coastal routes in the world. Like, were you a lady of Lycra before this challenge?
I was a triathlete, Catherine.
Okay.
I always could run really easily, swim, and bike was actually my bit of a bogey part of the sport. you cycle, so you know you can't really buy your way into comfort on a bike. You have to spend hours in the saddle, and it took me a while to get that message. So after Anthony died in October 2016, I actually cycled the Camino 6 months later in memory of him. And that actually was just the most amazing, very raw, grief-felt whole journey where you're like cycling along, but yet it was very curing and healing. So I really fell in love with touring on the bike then, because you can really see, like in a car, you're going too fast to see the smaller details. In the bike, our walking takes you a bit too long to get anywhere, anyway, time. But cycling is just the perfect balance. You can cover enough ground. You've time to savour the surroundings, smell the roses on the road, stop easily, take a picture, whereas, you know, you're limited, in a, especially in a camper van. It's very hard to pull in spots and, you know, get that little view over the horizon.
You talked about doing the Camino there and it being a very raw experience for you, obviously a year after Anthony's passing. It's hard to believe, Orla, that he'll be gone 5 years this October. Like, how has it been different doing a journey like this for you? Because, as you say, you have lots of quiet time, lots of reflection, like that feeling of freedom post-COVID. And again, as you said, it's a celebration of Anthony's life, what you're doing as well. But how has it been different a couple of years on?
Well, I've learned to walk with grief, so I can really be grateful for what I had when I had my brother alive. You know, I've really celebrated all the extra years we had, because Anthony actually nearly died twice growing up when we were kids. So one of the reframes I quickly had after he died was actually gratitude for all the extra years I had with him and all the brilliant gifts he brought to all our lives and the amazing experiences. And, you know, it's still shocking that it's actually 5 years, because it doesn't feel like
it
5 years.
No.
It feels like maybe three. So it's just at this stage of having healed and been able to actually celebrate. Like, Anthony went to Maríocht in Gaeltacht and Sleighhead. And I always thought, I went to Cointreau and Ventry around the corner. I always thought I had the better one because I had the lovely beach. But this time I learned, because I cycled through there and there was a fabulous beach in Maríocht. So it was really, it was lovely to see. Like, he would have been playing soccer and volleyball on that beach. And you meet people along the way that just have really happy memories. They remember where they were when the Heineken Cup was lifted. They remember that, just the great admiration people had for him and his spirit. So that just warms you, and it's great that people fondly remember my brother, and he's left such a lasting legacy, and it's great to celebrate that.
Yeah, it must be so cathartic for you and for Olive and for the boys as well.
Oh, you know, it is. It's just, there's no way you could describe it. It fills you up, and yet you'll always have that sorrow and sadness inside you.
Because he was only 42 when he passed away, and I know that the shock of that, how you found out, because he was in Paris, and how you deal with a shock like that. And I don't know if you can take us back there in as much as you can. Does that day always stay with you?
It will always, until the day you die. You know, there's nothing could ever prepare you. Like, the day was just like a dream in one way, and it was such a shock. Like, I famously went down wailing like a banshee. I made noise I never knew I could. I cried that I nearly convulsed. But then when I had to do what I needed to do for my nephews, I was able to pull it together and do what I wanted to do. But even at the same time, finding that strength to do what you needed to do, I still, when I had moments, I would empty wretch. I would be so sick, like the shock of it. Yet I'm very lucky. I feel I'm a very holistic physio. I've studied a lot of psychology. I do craniosacral therapy and Bowen technique. And I was very lucky that I had a Bowen technique treatment booked for that Monday. So as soon as I had the treatment, the level of shock that I was dealing with, I was able to actually start assimilating it. And then I had homeopathy and support from other friends coming in. And this army of all my amazing friends came around me and supported. And then you could just see all the support of our community and everyone, like from the rugby to Ryanair to every person we met did everything to make our very tough journey as easy as possible.
Can I ask you, what is the Bowen technique that you mentioned there?
Oh, the Bowen technique is, it comes from Australia. It's a very gentle rolling move. So it resets the body. It just works with that your body heals itself. The same way when you cut your hand, you will create a clot. Okay. So it honours that and it encourages that healing system back into the body and gives it time to do it. So it just, for the instance of being in shock, it just helped me move out of my parasympathetic and get my sympathetic responses equal and homeostasis.
And following you and looking at your Instagram page, you set up a page on Instagram at Orla's Wild Ways, which I just think is brilliant. And that's where people have been following you, following the journey. And it's very apt because Anthony used to slag you off about your wild ways.
He loved my wild ways, Catherine, like all big brothers.
Going, will she ever settle down? Will that one ever settle down?
No.
But there, because I've been looking at it as well, and yoga is a big part of the journey for you as well. And it feels that you're doing a lot of healing on this journey. And going from the south to the north of the country, I know you're doing it at weekends. Right now, you're doing it pretty full time. But as you were saying, you work as a physio. So it what a way to take the time to be by yourself and heal in a way that, even though it's you know, as we were saying, nearly 5 years, so important that you take that time out for yourself, that you slow down. Did you feel that you needed to do that?
No, I would have felt I would have healed my heart a lot with Anthony's journey. But in regards, I love travel and adventure that... you know, people keep saying with the lockdown, how are you surviving, Orla? You know, you can't travel anywhere. Mm. Whereas I can travel in our amazing country. And it's been such, like when we started in Cork, when we could get to Cork in the middle of May, I had dry mouth for the whole week. I was so excited. I was like an overexcited, hyper child. I kept having to do everything to calm myself down because I went on a round the world trip 20 years ago and I was as excited in May when I got to go to Kinsale and start out of county. It was amazing. And the mind-blowing thing is I have travelled a lot of the world and seen amazing beaches, but there's nothing as amazing as what we have here on our own doorstep.
What's been your favourite part of the Wild Atlantic Way?
Oh my God, Catherine, that's a really tough question, because just when you think you've found your favourite place, you turn the corner and you find your next favourite place. You know, it's like Kinsale, everyone, as you know, is amazing. Skull. I'd never been to Crookhaven and it's so amazing there.
Stunning, yeah.
Oh, Barley Cove
for a swim. Beach. Oh. And you've been getting the weather as well up until the last week.
Yeah, I've only actually got wet 7 times in the whole trip, which is pretty amazing when you consider it's Ireland.
you picked the right summer to do it. And what's been the most difficult? Because, you know, on a bike, there's some difficult roads, tricky roads, hills.
The O'Connor Pass.
Okay. I hear you.
I don't think I could even drive it after having to cycle it. I think I was having a bit of post-traumatic stress for a few days after going up it. Going up was bad, but coming down was worse. My brakes were bubbling. I didn't know what was going to happen. The only way I could actually stop was using my left foot as a brake, because my brakes on the bike, even though they were pulled as hard as they could, the descent is too steep. It was absolutely frightening. O'Connor Pass. I don't think I'll be going there again.
We are getting a flood of messages in beautiful messages for you and for Anthony. And this email came in from Anastasia. Catherine, my son was in Crumlin in March 2016 when the Munster squad visited the hospital on the way to a match. Anthony and Gerry Flannery popped their heads into the room to say hello and sat either side of him on the bed, chatting like he was an old buddy. Alexander started playing rugby with the Rugby Tots about 2 years earlier. After a couple of seconds, Anthony realised it was very difficult for Alexander. He had peri orbital cellulitis and a patch over one eye. And Anthony was sitting on that side, and without a word, he got up and sat on the same side as Jerry. Such empathy and sensitivity in what was a very busy visit still brings tears to my eyes now. They gave him a Munster hat as a souvenir, and to this day, Alexander wears it with enormous pride. Much love to the fantastic Orla and the whole Foley family. There you go.
That's fabulous.
Come here, listen, one of the charities you're raising money for is CRY, for sudden cardiac death or sudden adult death syndrome, and Anthony had an undiagnosed heart condition. And what are the other charities you're raising money for?
The other charities are CARI. They provide support for victims of sexual abuse, children specifically, and their families. And the Midwestern Cancer Foundation. Anthony was on the board of Midwest Cancer Foundation, and he would have given his testimonial monies to them. So he was a huge supporter of them.
OK. So how can people donate?
They can donate on iDonate at Orla's Wild Ways in memory of Anthony Foley. Or if they can't remember that, orlafoley.com. There's a link in my About section to it.
OK. I have to ask you, because I know you've been on the road and you can tell by you that you love it. You're a woman who likes to be on the move, a bit like myself. Who's minding the dogs at home?
My very good parents are picking up the slack there, and a few friends have been helping out when my parents haven't. But 80% of the load has been my parents, and they've been brilliant, because I felt guilty going to a lot of beaches that my dogs would have loved.
So
it's like, I hope they can't smell sand off me when I go home. Well, so it's been great having people, because they're, you know, they're my Furbies. They're
absolutely
great.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, they might meet you at the finish line in Malinhead. When are you finishing? When are you planning to the end?
Oh, the dream would be Monday, but after looking at that weather forecast for the weekend.
Get into that caravan. Get into that caravan and open a bottle of wine.
A glass of Guinness has been the odd thing that I've had. I don't even drink Guinness, but on this trip, every so often, I'll have a glass of Guinness.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And your Instagram page, people can follow Orla's Wild Ways on Instagram, and take her through to the end of the journey. Donate where you can. And I love this Aoife Scott song, The Wild Atlantic Way, and I'm playing this especially for you. Orla Foley, you're brilliant.
Thanks.
Gur Margot Moira. OK, guys, it is now time for this. Time after 4 o'clock. It is the quiz of today, and we have rounded up events in history on this day, the 5th of August. We've got two people on the line who are playing for a fantastic prize. What is that? It is a staycation in the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick City. Two nights, breakfast each morning, dinner on one of the evenings as well. You can explore the Wild Atlantic Way, which I was just chatting to Orla Foley all about. You can go to the Cliffs of Moher, Bunratty, King John's Castle as well, and all those details are on www.inua.ie. So who is going to be heading off to Limerick? Well, we have Anne Maloney on the line, and we have John Gaffney on the line as well. How are you, lads?
Hello, how are you?
Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Good, good, good. Anne, you are player number one, so I'll start with you. Now, you're okay. A Carlow woman exiled in Clare. What happened, Anne?
Well, sure, look, I met a Clare man and I said yes too quickly, you know yourself now, Catherine. But yes, don't worry, as I said earlier on, the Carlow flags, jerseys and everything are flying high in Clare.
You wear the Carlow jersey in Clare. Where are you living in Clare?
In Ennis itself, in Ennis town itself, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, great town.
Are you there at the moment, or are you away, or what are you at?
I'm actually on my way up to visit my almost 90-year-old mother. So hello, Maura Shepherd. She'll be 90 in a month's time on the 20th of September. So I'm coming up to stay with her for two nights.
Lovely.
So big hello to her. She's living by herself. She's a great woman. Maura Shepherd. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm actually here with my cousin and his wife and daughter. So hi to Orla, Larry and Lisa. They're going to help me if they can.
Right.
Just on the edge, out in Grey Cull, out in Collection.
Oh, lovely part of the world.
Yes.
Lovely part of the world. And you're working as an SNA as well. Are you back properly to work?
Well, we will, thank God, now in September again. We are in actually the end of August. We'll be back again.
Okay.
So I'm working in Stonehall School in an autism unit. So hello to everyone in Stonehall.
Lovely. All right, Anne, stay on the line. John, how are you, sir?
Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Well, sure, I'm flying it. What is the weather doing in Cork? I'm obsessed with the weather today.
You know, it's not too bad. The moment catching, to be honest. It's dry here anyway, you know.
Okay, whereabouts in Cork are you?
I'm in Rushbrook in Cove.
Okay, lovely. So no lightning down there yet?
touch wood, no lightning.
No lightning. Okay. And what are you doing today? Are you working or are you taking it easy?
I'm actually a roofing contractor, so we were rained off about 1 o'clock.
Okay, okay. Definitely not the job when you get started, yellow warnings and lightning strikes and thunderstorms.
Definitely not.
Not
no,
to be on a roof today.
No.
All right, you love a bit of sea swimming as well?
I do. The best thing about Cork, you know, is they've got fountains down in Myrtleville. Great places to swim, you know, really nice.
Lovely. That's not a Cork accent I'm detecting, is it?
You know what? The backstory here is my dad is from Antrim, a place called Maystown.
Okay.
And my ma is from Ballincollig.
Okay, okay. So you've got a twinge of both.
I got a bit of stick from the housemates. You know, they're always slagging me. One day you're from the north, the next day you're like one of the young offenders.
All right. Well, listen. Good luck to both of you today. Do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Good luck, John.
Best of luck.
Thanks,
all right.
Brilliant.
Anne, I'm going to start with you because you are player one, and here is your first question.
Okay.
On this day in 1912, Japan's first taxi cab service opened in Tokyo. On what continent would you find Japan?
Asia.
Is the right answer, Anne. Breathe a big sigh of relief. You're off. John, coming to you. On this day in 1949, a powerful earthquake struck Tungurahua province in Ecuador. On what continent would you find Ecuador?
South America.
Is the right answer. Good man. All right. Anne, this is your clip. Take a listen.
It's up to you, New York.
That famous singer, Anne, starred in an Oscar-winning movie called From Here to Eternity, released on this day in 1953. Can you name the singer?
Frank Sinatra.
Good woman. Well done. John, coming to you. Have a listen to this.
Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
That famous singer and actor was found dead on this day in 1962. Can you name her?
Was it Marilyn Monroe?
It was. All right, that's two each, guys. Anne, coming back to you. US astronaut Neil Armstrong, the first man to set foot on the moon, was born in Ohio on this day. Was he born in 1930, 1932 or 1934?
1932, we'll go the middle.
Is the wrong answer, Anne.
It was
actually 1930. Don't worry, John, coming back to you. French politician Marine Le Pen was born on this day in Neuilly-sur-Seine. Was she born in 1964, 1966 or 1968?
I'll go with 1968.
That, my friend, is the right answer.
I can't believe it. What a guess.
What a guess. Sometimes all it takes is a guess. Well done. Okay, Anne, back to you. Have a listen to this.
No one told you life was gonna be this way. Your job's a joke, you broke. Your love life's the old way. It's like you're always stuck in second.
On this day in 2015, Jennifer Aniston married actor Justin Theroux in Los Angeles. We just heard a clip of the TV show that made her famous, catapulted her into fame. Can you name it?
Friends.
Is the right answer. Well done, Anne. Okay, we're neck and neck. John, it's back to you. Have a listen to this. English actor Anthony Cotton was born on this day in 1975. He plays the character of Sean Tully in the famous TV show. We just heard the theme from there. Do you know the show?
Coronation Street.
Well done. All right. Anne, you need to get this right to stay in the game. All right. No pressure.
No pressure.
On this day in 2010, 33 workers became trapped after a mine in the Atacama Desert of Chile collapsed. The rescue mission took 69 days. What we want to know is which country has the bigger population? Chile, Venezuela, or Peru?
Oh.
Chile, Venezuela or Peru? Which country has the biggest population?
Peru, I'm going with.
Was that a guess?
Yeah.
It was the right guess, Anne.
Oh, thank God. Come on, the scallionators.
Come on, the scallionators. All right, 4-4. Okay, John, that means the pressure is back on you. Get this right and you are the winner today. If you don't get it right, we are going to a tiebreaker, okay? On this day in 2011, Thai businesswoman and politician Yingluck Shinawatra was elected Prime Minister of Thailand, becoming the first woman to hold that post. What we want to know is which country has the biggest population? Thailand, South Korea or Vietnam?
Thailand, South Korea or Vietnam?
Yeah, which country has the biggest population?
I take a stab at Vietnam.
That, my friend, is the right answer.
I don't believe it.
Well done, well done, John.
It is an afternoon of guessing, lads.
Commiserations.
Well done.
You'll be very welcome in the Banner County.
Anne, well done to you. We will send you a Ray D'Arcy Show mug and you could give it to Maura for her 90th birthday. How about that?
She's listening, so happy birthday, Maura.
Happy birthday, Maura. And enjoy your visit to Carlo back home today. And thanks for playing and drive safely.
Thank you, Catherine.
Drive safely. Stay safe on the roads.
John, take care. Bye-bye.
Well done. John, congratulations. You are off to the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Limerick. You're going for two nights. You have dinner. You have brekkie. You can go and explore. Who are you going to take with you?
It's a mystery question, no, Catherine, to be honest.
Well, you have all the time in the world to think about it because you can take the trip whenever you want, maybe a little bit later in the season as well when you get a bit of time out. Listen, mind yourself today. Stay off the roofs. And
you too, Catherine. Thanks very much.
Well done. Well done. The brilliantly beautiful Debbie Harry there. Maybe it was all the talk about mullets that inspired me to go back to the 80s, but love that track. Lots of texts coming in here for Paul O'Donovan as well. Tell Paul that we all love him loads and we're very proud of him and his fellow rowers. I just love how laid back he is. He could easily change careers and become a stand-up comedian. That comes in from Orla, who's a big fan in Mayo. What a lovely lad is Paul O'Donovan. As an Irish person, we are all so proud. Could you please ask him to come to Mayo to help get our hands on Sam? You need a bit of the O'Donovan good luck up there. Jane in Blackwater. I was delighted to have rain this morning, Catherine. It saved me water in the flower pots. Yeah, that is the benefit. That is the bonus. It's the big one. Frankie McGinley, Catherine Thomas, I heard you talking about the weather and informing me that it is lashing thunder and lightning in Germany. Where I am currently in Germany, it is sunny with a blue sky. Granted, it's been like a bad summer in Ireland for the past number of days, but not today. Well, I was only going by what was that thing called, Kieran? Blitzortung, that website, was telling me. And then somebody else said, Ray, Catherine, you've got to give the Met Aran app a plug. It is so precise, giving specific forecasts for exactly where you are. I love the rainfall forecast map feature. It was great on our recent holidays during the heat wave. You were on our boat from Inishmore. We also went to Loch Eyne and Skibbereen then. We're not following you, honestly. We also met you in Kilkenny Castle last August. Just saying, Ray, I'll get a fright now if I go outside the building and you're standing outside. Paul would need to take that medal from the car after telling everyone he's keeping it in there. He could be minus his medal. There you go. We'll try and get to a couple more of them, but let's take a quick break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I am delighted to be joined now in studio by two members of Irish band The Academic. Their new single is out now. It's called Not Your Summer. It is brilliant. We're going to listen to it in a couple of minutes' time. Craig and Stephen, lovely to see you both in person.
Yeah, lovely to be here. Thanks for having us in.
How are you?
We're doing well. It's a very strange time to have music out. You know, it's like we just recorded and released an EP and we don't have any gigs, but it's just great to have that buzz of like new music out again.
Well, I have to say the single is gorgeous. You've called it an anti-summer bop. Would that be fair? Like, sort of describe that to me. It's called Not Your Summer, but it's an anti-summer bop.
Yeah, I think so. It was just at the start of the year when we all went back into lockdown and I think the four of us weren't together. We weren't feeling like a band and we were just kind of looking at everybody we know, like loved ones, you know, siblings, parents, everybody not having these opportunities, not living the lives they should be. And that was the first song that kind of got written in the new year.
Okay.
And it was just a song. It just lived on a laptop and then we just had a lovely kind of Zoom conversation where we said, look, will we do something for our own mental health and just do something, you know, and get together. And we just made ourselves a bubble. We got into this man's bedroom and brought whatever equipment we had, and we tried to produce an EP from there.
And does it feel great now to just have it done, have it out?
Oh, stop. Yeah. Especially when you're doing it all in-house.
It definitely got us through like the first half of the year, without a doubt. It gave us something to focus on. And like Craig was saying, we didn't have the liberty of being in a fancy studio or having an outside producer. So we just kind of got together, the four of us, in like my mom and dad's house in my childhood bedroom, and we take the term bedroom pop very seriously.
So many people had to, do you know?
If you listen very carefully, like, you can hear Stephen's mom hoovering in some of the vocal takes.
100%.
Okay, let's take a listen. See, can we hear her hoovering? That is The Academics' new single, Not Your Summer, and it is taken from their new EP, Community Spirit. It's a great one, lads. It's catchy, I have to say. I have Craig and Stephen in studio with me. Delighted that it's out. And tell us about the music video. You've shot kind of a cool music video to go with it.
Yeah, we went
to an abandoned water world in Portrush.
Happy days.
And, if you check out the video, you'll get to see Craig do an incredible stunt. He dives headfirst into an empty swimming pool, and we do all our own stunts at The Academics. Yeah. So
love it.
They brought in a stunt team from that helped with the Game of Thrones filming up the north, and they had these like family of stunt father, son, like cousins, the whole thing. And then they took me in and they showed me how to do it. And I went and done one jump, and he's like, "He's grand."
Let him off.
He's a pro.
He can do it. Looking forward to seeing it. Okay, we were talking just while the song was on there about getting back and doing real gigs again. Like, can you remember, like, when was your last live gig that you did?
It was in March of 2020, and it was in Dubai.
Okay.
Yeah. We were in Dubai with the coronas, and picture this, and things were just starting to, we were starting to get word that things were getting serious at home. And then we flew home. We managed to stay safe and sound, thank God. And we haven't played a gig in front of anyone since.
My God. And I when I was chatting to Gavin James a couple of months ago, he was saying the fear and the nerves of kind of getting back up again and getting back on a stage again was quite palpable for him. Like, is it something that you are looking forward to, or will it be strange?
Yeah, sure. It's hard enough walking around town.
But our first show back is at the end of the month in the UK. We're playing Reading and Leeds. So our first show back is like one of the biggest festivals in Europe to thousands of people. So,
and they're letting us open on the main stage.
Yeah,
wow. That's a good one.
We're going to be very
go back with a bang. Go back with a bang. And what did you think about the news with Electric Picnic today? You've played that umpteen times. It was disappointing.
Look, we were gutted, and it's about so much more than the picnic. It's about an industry of live events that's been decimated with like 70,000 people or so working the live events industry. And we just feel like we need a roadmap as soon as possible to get all these amazing people back to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was listening to Danny from the Coronas on this morning talking about it. And it's just when you say March 2020 was the last gig, it's such a long time. Like, how did you, Craig, how did you stay sane? How did you stay creative? Lots of different artists had different ways of doing that. How did you get through it?
Yeah, I think at the start we had a bit of a slump because we were used to being in a van and traveling around, and that was easy for us to connect with people and show people what we were doing. And then it just became, you know, making music, writing over email, and the soul was sucked out of it for us. And we eventually kind of got comfortable, and it was something as simple as just like going on Instagram Live, you know, and reaching out and just trying to spread some joy in somebody's day. And it was simple stuff like that. We tried a few TikToks and we're not very good at it. Yeah. But
a great way to try and connect with the fans in any way, shape or form.
It's one of the great positives of social media.
It kind of forced us to kind of try and think of really creative ways to kind of stay active and engage with people who like our music all over the world while we were sitting at home.
And did you feel a certain responsibility as well, because you have such a huge fan base, not just here, but all around the world? And, you know, young people, like, people were going through a really difficult time. So to kind of be able to have that platform, as you say, to bring some level of joy must have been cathartic in some shape or form.
We had an EP luckily recorded before the pandemic hit, and we kind of toyed with the idea of maybe holding it because what's the point? But we just decided, you know, people want music, and the way the music industry is now, people want more music all the time. And you're kind of always chasing it. And we just figured we'll put it out.
Put it out.
try and make some music videos.
Yeah. Some people seem to be holding back and keeping their music, wondering like, oh, I'll wait until we can properly gig again, till everything's back open. Yeah. But we just decided for the good of kind of ourselves and our fans, it would just be better to get new music out there.
Well, you're sounding so mighty as always. And I'm just looking at your set list here for your tour in spring 2022. And there's a lot of tours on it. There's a lot of dates. There's a lot of cities. So that must be exciting just to kind of, you know, see you've got a gig the 9th, the 10th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th. Like you're back on the road next
sharing
year.
Beds.
Sharing beds.
Yeah, the van.
Living the rock and roll lifestyle.
Yeah, living out of a suitcase.
Listen, it's great to see you. Thanks a million for coming in.
Thank you for having us. The new single.
Drive Time with Sarah McInerney is next, lads. And I will be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Dash Show on RTE Radio 1. Have a great summer.